7:19 on a Tuesday morning. Joining us now in studio is Superintendent Matt Hillman of the Northfield School District. Matt, thank you so much for coming in today.
It's a bright and beautiful morning here, Jeff. Well, maybe not bright and maybe not quite beautiful yet, but it is spring break.
Yeah, and maybe it is bright and beautiful where some of the spring breakers are at.
There, you know, I just always choose to look on the sunny side of life, Jeff, as you know, and as you we said, this is spring break for Northfield Public Schools this week, and so you know, we hope that all of our students and staff who have had a chance to step away, it's always good to take a break now and then, you know, step away and come back. And, you know, once we come back from spring break, it is pretty much a dead sprint, you know, until the end of the school year with lots of things happening, state testing, advanced placement testing, you know, all the great kinds of field trips and other wrap-up activities that we do as our teachers and students run through the proverbial finish line in June.
It's not that far off, and we want to thank you for coming in today. I know you've had spring break for you as well, and you've got family in town, so we appreciate you taking a little break and talking with us, because the business goes on.
We keep moving forward, that's for sure.
Now, we're going to talk a few things today. We're going to start off with literacy, and maybe... Maybe I don't have that. Maybe I need that. Can you get me some of that?
Jeff, I listen to the station. You are literate. There's no question about that.
Well, thank you. But let's talk about that. You wanted to. That's one of the items that you wanted to mention. I want to also talk about the facilities and where we're going with that.
Sure.
Let's start off with that.
So you know, I just think that if you think back to your days in elementary school, you know, most people think back. It's pretty clear that a substantial portion of our elementary school day is spent teaching reading. And in education, we call it literacy instruction, but I'm going to use the term reading just for sake of simplicity with our listeners. And, you know, what we all know is that reading is the gateway to so many other things. Once you've learned to read proficiently, the world opens for you. You know, you can, I'm sure there might have been something you read at some point, Jeff, that got you excited about radio in terms of, and of course, listening and being part of it. But everybody who's out there, they have a favorite book. It was something that they read or a subject matter. For example, maybe someone started to engage in biology coursework. And of course, a lot of that is reading the textbook and then learning through experimentation. Reading is the gateway to all other things. And so it's such an important part of what we do. And really, over the last several years here in Northfield Schools, we just have felt that we don't have as many students reading proficiently at grade level as we think we should, given what our community expects of us and the kind of support that we have with our community. And so when you look at the averages, our averages, you know, look okay overall. You know, as we always have a great reputation as a school district, but we're not satisfied with that. We want to make sure that every child, you know, has the skills that they need to take advantage of this world-class education, you know, that the community of Northfield provides for our children. And we've just noticed that we just don't have as many students as we'd like reading proficiently at grade level, especially by grade three. So there's a lot of research, in fact, over and over, there's research that suggests that if you read proficiently by the end of grade three, you have the table set before you for success. It doesn't mean that if you don't read proficiently by grade three that it's game over. It means there's some other things we need to do. But you know, just this past year, our third grade proficiency was above the state average once again, but still only at about 57-58%, which is pretty low for us comparatively. And that was just one example in a series of symptoms that our district had been looking at over the last several years. So, go ahead.
No, I was just literacy. I think back, you know, it's been a long time since I've been in that grade. You know, it's been probably close to 50 years ago now. Has the teaching, have the expectations changed at all in that 50 years? Are we doing things the same we were? Are we doing them differently in 2018 now? Or?
You know, it's probably a little bit of both. You know, teaching children to read the science of it has come a long way. So if you were to come into our classrooms, you would see some things that are familiar from when you went to school. You'd also see a number of things that aren't familiar. I think one of the biggest differences in the past, say, 15 years is that for a long time, the approach that we had as a society to education was, you have an opportunity for an education, and it's your job as a student, as a family, to take advantage of it. That has really shifted, you know, since the early 2000s, I think appropriately so, saying that it is really on the school district, in partnership with the family and the student, to make sure that we get students where they need. And so, if a student didn't learn to read as well as they could have 20 years ago, I think the prevailing thought was, well, we gave you all the opportunities. You had an opportunity to be working on this at home, and we just have to keep moving forward. The next year is the next year, and we just keep plowing forward because we focused on what we taught, not what students learned. And so in the last 20 years, we've really change that focus to saying, we're looking at student learning, not necessarily the teaching portion is important, but the most important thing is the student outcome. Can the student do what we've set out to do? So the way that we teach reading is different. You'll see some things that are the same, you know, in terms of when most of our listeners went to school. And we continue to evolve to try to get better.
Now, have you identified, you'd like more than 57 by the end of third grade, 57%, to have a better, you know, comprehension of when they're reading. But before they're in, by the time they get to that point, they're, what, about eight, 9 years mm-hmm. old. Have you identified a point prior to that where they need help? Is it, okay, hey, listen, when they're 3 and 4 years old, we need them to do more of this. When they're 6 and 7, we need them to do more of this. Have those problems, is that something you can identify?
Well, certainly. I mean, I think if you go back to thinking about the foundations of reading, some of the first things are letter names mm-hmm. and sounds. So letter naming fluency is really important. So parents and grandparents out there, you cannot underestimate the power of singing that ABC song, you know, with your young grandchildren, even as soon as they're born. Making sure that as soon as it's appropriate, where you can hold a child on your lap and read the book to them. In fact, there's quite a bit of research that simply says that students who simply have books in their house, not even that they were read to them from those books, but students who have books in their home, that they have, they are on the track to be proficient by the end of grade 3. But I think one of the key things that we look at is early on is letter naming fluency and, of course, understanding and knowing the letter sounds. And then as we move through, one of the big things that we look at is oral reading fluency. So how fast, not that the speed is important, but at a reasonable clip, how fast can kids read fluently, so where they can pronounce the words appropriately? We know that if you have those things in place, that reading comprehension is the natural next step. And what research tells us is that you have those foundational skills, you know, letter naming fluency, the ability to distinguish and understand what each sound, each letter makes, and that progresses to where you are chunking those letters together and understanding how those sounds work together. That leads to you be able to read fluently, which then leads to comprehension. And it's such an important piece that we look at our reading curriculum every so often, and frankly, we had about more than 30 elementary educators and a couple of community members, actually, who participated in a thorough review of what we teach and how we teach literacy. And so they spent several months reviewing this. They looked at our data. They looked at where we were strong, areas where we need to improve. They reviewed a number of different curriculums. Frankly, in Northfield for a long time, we had a consistent curriculum, but it was implemented in different ways, and nothing was wrong with that. That's the way that it had developed. We were mm-hmm. very much a standards-based approach, looking at the state standards and making sure we're teaching those, but we determined we needed something more consistent. We needed a stronger base, if you will, and so our teaching staff, along with our Director of Teaching and Learning, Mary Hansen, our Director of Assessment Services, Hope Langston, and a number of other folks, Northfield Promise, a local advocacy group, really helped us as well. They made a selection to pick some new curriculum starting next year. It's from the Center for the Collaborative Classroom. It's got some really high-end teaching strategies, really focusing on how can we break students down so that they can have some independent time while also conferring with the teacher, because we know that reading with the teacher is so important. So it's really heavily based around that. And so we're very excited we were able to make that decision in October. The materials actually started to arrive in December, so we've had this really nice long runway, Jeff, where teachers looking forward to next year could actually practice a couple of the units this year and get familiar with how the curriculum materials work. We had some training for staff online in January. They could pick when they wanted the training. It was an online training. We had a full day of training a half a day for Collaborative Classroom in February on a day that we were a little nervous about the weather. That would have been the President's Day, that snowstorm that day, but we got it in. We have two additional full days of training for elementary teaching staff who are involved in literacy instruction in June. We're reprising that. Boy, I've had a cup of coffee using some big words this morning, right? We're doing that training again in August for the people who are new to the system, so they get the same training, and anyone who couldn't make it in June. So what I really want listeners to know is that, you know, while we're very proud of our world-class school system, we're so proud of our teachers who care so much about their kids, and our teachers work so hard. We've got kids who want to learn. we know that there are a few things in our way that from achieving what we really think we can achieve, and we think that this combination of a new curriculum plus up-to-date training is the pieces that are going to put those things together so we can be back on track in terms of the kinds of results that Northfielders expect from their public school system.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking with you more about that at some time in the future.
Absolutely.
As this thing rolls out. Let's talk about facilities.
You bet.
The voters, of course, voted down a referendum to build a couple of new schools this past fall. It's been a few months now. It's been about four and a half months. Where are you at as far as bringing that whole thing up again, reevaluating the schools, the needs, the future of Northfield schools? Where are we at right now?
Well, Jeff, I think we're in a spot right now where we're ready to have some substantial conversations about what is next. And so, you know, after the voters, you know, I think the key thing is the will of the voters won out in November. It's not that referendum won or wins or loses. It's that the will of the people is enforced through the ballot box, which is one of the great things about living in this nation in terms of local. This is, as we've said before, a bond referendum is really local democracy, you know, participatory democracy at its best. And so what we did is we tried to learn from the results of that bond referendum. And so I met individually with probably a dozen, maybe more people, just getting their thoughts, and some of them, most of them, people who had the courtesy to publicly say, hey, I can't support this particular bond referendum for X, Y, and Z. And I really appreciated that because at least I understood, you know, where the flaws in the plan were for some people. So having a number of individual meetings was very helpful. We brought our ongoing facilities committee online in February. And so we have a citizens and staff ongoing facilities committee. Now, that's not just about buildings in terms of constructing buildings. Mm-hmm. That's looking at roof replacement. That's looking at exciting things like parking lot repair, you know, that ongoing maintenance that the school district needs to maintain. That was always part of our facilities plan. We needed to get that rolling. So we have that up and rolling. We're very thankful to the six community members who are participating on that with our staff as well. And then the next part is something that we're calling the Facilities Action Team. And we've invited more than 30 people to come from a broad range of stakeholder groups within Northfield to come together to discuss our master facilities plan that was developed over 3 years, and to say, hey, here's the parts of the plan that we think had some chance or were positive. Here were some things that were well thought out. It could be that on some of them the timing isn't right. It could be some of the projects we may have to relook at totally. So that Facilities Action Team, we've extended invitations to more than 30 community members representing a variety of stakeholder groups. We plan to have 3 meetings with that group in April. And after that, what we're going to be doing is asking them to make a recommendation to the board, you know, for the next steps. And I don't know what that recommendation will be. A lot of folks have a lot of thoughts that they've been willing to share with me, and we will provide those thoughts to that Facilities Action Committee, but really lead them through a discussion to say, here was the plan that we developed over 3 years with, you know, hundreds of people's input. What we want to do is take a look at it and say, are there parts of the projects that were just not appropriate for this time and place? Are there things that we maybe need to go back and rethink? Is there something that they think that we should be looking at in the next year or so in terms of coming back to the voters with some part of the plan? And so that's where the Facilities Action Team is at. We're really excited about it because it is the logical next step. We invited everybody in the community to participate, 25 public meetings over 3 years. That got the ball rolling, right? Some really good pieces. The bond referendum, certainly with a 47% participation, we know was a very high turnout. That gave us some great feedback. And then the final piece is saying, how can we take that feedback and how can we say what's next and look ahead? And so, we'll share the updates with them of what has happened over the last year, specifically in regards to early childhood and additional space constraints that have really exacerbated over the last year in our elementary schools. And we will be looking ahead. We know that we have some facilities needs, and we know there's a variety of reasons for that. And so what I really hope is listeners can make sure that they're paying attention to KYMN and, you know, to other local media outlets and the school district website in order to make sure that they keep up to date on that information.
All right. Well, that's another topic that we'll be discussing, I'm sure, quite a bit in the future.
Yes, it will.
We're running out of time, but I want to talk to you about another thing that is going on. That's the state legislature right now is meeting. And, of course, the school, not only of the funding, but so many of the other aspects as far as policy and such. It really revolves around some of the decisions that they make. Where are you at, and what issues are you as an administrator watching for, looking out, and maybe even lobbying for?
Yeah, and thanks for bringing this up, Jeff. And I had asked to talk mm-hmm. about this because I think so many people, you know, we listen to KYMN, we look at newspapers, and we feel, how can we make our voice heard? And I think a lot of people look to Washington or they look to other places to how they can make their voice. A key thing is looking at St. Paul. St. Paul, our state government, has tremendous influence over our daily lives. So I really encourage listeners to make sure they're paying attention to what's happening at the Capitol in St. Paul because it's so important. One thing that I'm really pleased to see, bipartisan, unanimous approval of the Senate yesterday, was the pensions bill. And the pensions bill included a number of things. It also included a longer-term fix for TRA, the Teachers Retirement Association. And so I think the key thing is that that's a bill that had been vetoed actually twice by the governor for a variety of different reasons. For we can get into the political part of mm-hmm. why it was vetoed. People can look that up. But the bottom line is that we knew that 30 years from now that pension fund could have an issue. And what we know is that Minnesota's pension fund has been in better shape compared to others because we have acted early when the folks who do those calculations are looking ahead and saying, oh, we have a potential problem because there may not be as many people working. Or frankly, one of the biggest issues with pensions right now is that people are living longer. It's a wonderful thing. It creates an issue in managing that pension. So that's a piece that's not very exciting to people, mm-hmm. but what we know is it's so important because we don't want those pension funds to become problematic, and we want to be able to intervene before it really becomes a problem like we've seen in some other states. So really happy that the Senate approved that. Sounds like that's all systems go toward the governor. Hopefully that will take place. So I'm very pleased to say we have something that was a really important thing mm-hmm. that a unanimous approval of the Senate yesterday, so that's wonderful.
What is the fix? Was it just money? Was it policy? What needed to be fixed?
A little bit of both. Mm-hmm. Part of it is changing the assumption on the return rate. So mm-hmm. Minnesota has often assumed that we would have a larger return, which actually it had met for quite some time, mm-hmm. than what many other states and other national pensions do. So they okay. modified and lowered the estimate that they have for the return on their investments of the fund. What they also have done is they've increased the employer share. They've also they've decreased the cost of living adjustment, very minor. And then I believe it's 6 years from now. It's a fix that actually is going to take place over the next mm-hmm. 6 or 7 years. So part of it, employers will play a little bit more. Part of it, current retirees who are currently receiving benefits, their cost of living adjustment will be slightly reduced over the next several years. And then I believe that it's 6 years from now where current employees will have their contribution increased modestly.
All right. We're just about out of time. Anything else?
School safety. Make sure we pay attention to that, you know, in terms of the fact yeah. that a couple of different bills. But we know that the governor's looking at some increase in funding, which is always welcome. But remember, you know, as I've said before, the key thing to school safety is making sure that kids in our schools have positive adult relationships, not just with people in the school, but with people outside the school. We know that if a kid has someone in their life who they know cares about them, we know that they're going to be willing to tell that person something that's making them nervous. A lot of these kinds of issues can be avoided. There's, of course, some things we need to do physically to our schools. But if you really want to make a difference for your listeners, make sure that the kids in your neighborhood know who you are. Make sure that you're caring about the children who are around you, and make sure that every kid at least has one caring adult in their life.
All right. Matt, thank you so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jeff. Take care.
Superintendent of the Schools, Dr. Matt Hillman.